This episode of the Off Course Podcast is sponsored by UST Mamiya. Their graphite shaft offerings are represented by the word quality, performance, and feel, which I believe is an excellent way to describe their lineup. Whether you are familiar with their early staples like the Pro Force and Gold Series, their recoil iron shafts, or you're like me and currently exploring their Link offering, they're bound to have an option that suits your game and style. Visit www.ustmamiya.com to learn more.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, once again to another episode of the original Off Course Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Edwards. We are live on location here at THP HQ in the tech studio with Adam Rayberg for Bridgestone. What's up, Adam?
Hey man, how's it going? Thanks for having me into the studio. Pleasure to be here and talk all things Bridgestone and golf.
Mostly Bridgestone, mostly you.
no me, just Bridgestone.
Facial hair, beard acumen, things like that. Yeah. So we actually have had a good couple days here in the studio, getting to talk auto, see how it works.
Yeah.
Hit some of the new Tour B lineup, which was really fun. Played some golf in unbelievably windy conditions today.
Tried to play some golf.
I'm sort of emotionally broken at this point. I didn't know it was going to impact me as negatively as it did, but
yes,
so here we are.
Shook after that windy golf.
Yeah. For sure. So how much golf have you been playing this year?
Not very much this year. In Atlanta, it's been a little dreary in March, but coming into April here is getting a little nicer and the weather's getting warmer, so I'm getting the itch a little bit. It was fun to get out and play while up here. Definitely kind of wants me to scratch the itch a little bit more, so I want to get out there. The Masters is coming up super soon, so getting out there is a priority now.
So you've been pretty much an ATL guy for a long time. What is it like coming off the off season? Because your off season is different than mine.
Off season?
Yeah, exactly.
No off season.
It gets cooler there.
Yeah, but we play year round.
Tragically cold, like it does where I'm from. Is there an ebb and flow to your golf season? Is there a time when you're not really playing?
Yeah, I mean November, December gets a little chilly, but like it depends on the year. I remember last year at the end of 2020. It was so warm all in November and December and January. So I played a lot of golf heading into 2021. But this year was a little chillier in December. And really, we were really busy actually with work in January. We had some, you know, shoots. We had some player testing going on. So was traveling a little bit. We went to the PGA show. So we had some things going on in January. So kind of now I'm getting... You know, it's getting a little warmer and wanting to play it a little bit more. But, yeah, you could play your round pretty much in Atlanta. If you pick and choose, it's going to be sometimes too cold to play, but not like up there where you're at, my friend.
In the frozen tundra of pure disappointment.
Yes.
And I can't really decide. So today was like 80, but I don't know if that was the temperature or the speed of the wind that we were dealing with. That was fun, but... I sit at home waiting for the perfect day, and in Ohio, it's just really windy right now.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was hoping to get away from that. Obviously, didn't. But we managed around there okay. We had some
scraped it around
some good shots.
Yeah.
You know, definitely. What I struggle with when I travel is I get so accustomed to the style of fairways, the style of greens, around the green. You know, chipping. For me, that's like the first thing that goes. If I get on a different type of grass, and like here, we're in Nashville.
Right.
There's the overseeded rye, which is like really sticky.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's the fairway, which is like fairly firm.
Dormant for the most part, too, still. Yeah.
And then you have like the first cut, which is like splashy dormant.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
Firm. And yeah. Then you have the green side, which is like all...
Super tight.
Super tight.
Yeah.
And then we happened to play on a course today that had just sanded their greens. So they weren't exactly, like, overly receptive.
Yep.
So, like, all day I'm just emotional.
Yeah.
You know,
it was a roller coaster.
Every shot is a different... It felt like I was hitting one left-handed and one right-handed. But
every par 3 we played had, like, a 30-mile-per-hour crosswind.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I'm going to carve 8-iron, like, 25 yards into this left pin. So... That was a little difficult. It would have been nice if they'd just been dead into the wind and dead downwind. But man, there were some real major crosswinds. I think I blew it right on every par three, at least like 20, 40 yards.
And of course, I pulled it left. So being in the same cart, yeah, thank goodness we can't cart on a par three because it would have been worthless. But is there, so you were kind of, I felt this in my heart. You were kind of, I think, like silently judging the flight of my ball being a little too high playing in the wind. Is that fair?
That ball flight was tall, my friend. Yeah, it's up there, which is fine because, I mean, the thing, I never envy somebody with high ball flight because that is something that a lot of people crave. I mean, a lot of people want to hit the ball higher and launch it higher. So never be ashamed of that high ball flight. It's just a different game that I play. I flight it down.
Yeah.
And I've always tried to work to get the ball down on those shots, especially like 8-iron in. But never be ashamed of that high ball flight because there'll be a day where you're craving to hit the ball up there. So hang on to it as long as you can.
So at one point, we step up on a par four. It's not a long par four. And it's like into the wind, but kind of a crosswind.
Yes.
And I hit a 5-iron. And it was definitely one of my higher 5-irons of the day,
yeah,
of the year probably.
Probably like 200 feet,
and then
220
and then
up
you
in the
look
air
at me. Well, I mean, anyone who follows the YouTube channel for THP knows that I get the ball elevated pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But so you walk up past me on the tee, and I'm pretty sure the comment you made was like, get ready to see the complete opposite of what you just did. And I was like, was that a compliment or is he judging me? I can't tell.
No, I probably like hit one head high that never got above like 10 feet off the ground and just rolled down there. And yeah, it just shows there's two different ways to play the game. You
right.
had about the same distance I did. You know, you covered like a flight in the air, and mine was rolling around like a you know, tumbleweed through the fairway.
Was,
so
it was almost like you set it in your head, and you're like, "Let me double down on this."
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it was a little super low. It was a little extra stingy of a stinger.
I love that. Yeah, but it was fun to play, man. It's always interesting to get on different types of grass and experience golf in a different way.
Oh man, absolutely.
You know, I'm 100% of the impression if it's not a perfect day, RX is my ball. And we were having some laughs on those super tight lies with the greens not being overly receptive. It was like, that's not really how that ball's designed, buddy. Like, because you're over here playing XS, and you're like, I can spin that. You might have a little more trouble than I will.
Well, quite honestly, I am an XS player, but it was tough today in a windy conditions to control the spin because as opposed to what some announcers may say on TV, wind doesn't add spin. A while back, I think Faldo made a comment of the wind adds spin to the ball. It actually doesn't add spin. It just accentuates the spin and rising up. So today, putting a lot of spin on the ball was good in some. I think the last hole I had 75 yards, and I just hit dead into the wind, the hardest 52, and I was playing it like it was 125, and the ball just rose up in the air, and it landed perfectly at 80 yards, but I hit it like I wanted to hit it 120. So, that to me, that's fun golf, too, and, you know, golf obviously is fun when you play in really normal conditions and you can score a little bit better, but today, you know, obviously, we didn't score like we'd want to.
Yourself. I'm pretty sure I shot like 600. So.
Yeah. But it's fun to kind of beat it around a course like that and kind of play against the elements because, you know, the wind was hard, but it was consistent all day. It was pretty strong on every hole. It wasn't like gust. It was just blowing the whole day. And
yeah.
I love golf, and I love playing it in different ways. And today was fun to play it in an undulating course of elevation up and down to the greens and fairways, but then kind of a ton of wind like you'd see at Florida.
Yeah. Well, I always like to hit it over the wind. So, I'll take a calm day with a touch of rain over a windy day and no rain. So.
Oh, no rain. That's probably the thing I don't like the most is playing in rain. I don't know why, but I've never been able to figure that one out. I mean, cold is what it is. You can kind of beat it around, but rain, maybe I'm getting too soft in my golf choices with year round golf that we have in Georgia.
Yeah, not a heavy rain. We're talking like a light spittle.
A little rain. Mist. Yeah,
yeah, mist of rain.
That'll be fine.
Scotland style.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun, but we also had a nice opportunity to walk through the new Tour B lineup, and I've been strongly invested in the success of Bridgestone balls over the years. You know that.
Yep.
We're kind of joking around about you started with Bridgestone 11 years ago.
Yep.
And I remember back then, I was like just falling in love with like J40 and J15.
Oh, yeah.
I had, my dad had actually gifted me a set of used J33 CBs.
Yeah, remember that J33 driver? Man, that thing was fire.
I remember Freddy bombing that. Yes. But, yeah, the J33 CBs, I thought I was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
I thought I was something special hitting those things. They were a little compact iron.
Yeah, they were. I mean, back then we didn't, quite frankly, we didn't make a huge forgiving, you know, set of irons. They were player irons. You know, we had the... Later, we had the 38 dual pockets, were a little longer heel to toe, and gave a little bit more forgiveness on those toe hits. But, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, how clubs have evolved now, those were pretty tight player irons. You know, you had to be pretty good players. And we lived in that space on purpose. We knew we were kind of going after the better player with the CBs and the dual pockets. And, yeah, every now and then I pull them out of my closet, too, and you know, look down at that dual pocket, and it's... It's a pretty cool looking club, but definitely not the most forgiving club today's standards. You got to be a pretty good player.
Yeah. So you have a set of irons that are in the bag right now that are they have that dual pocket concept in the longer irons. And as someone who
hit a lot of long irons today,
yeah, no kidding. Well, as someone who's followed the club builds from you guys, obviously there's always that subtle hope that we see some of that stuff stateside. It's kind of pressed. I think every time I talk to either you or Elliot over there,
yeah.
But, you know, I would not feel right not at least asking about it and seeing if there is any opportunity to see some more Bridgestone clubs come our way.
I think so. I don't have a close to this timeline answer for that one, but it's always something that we're working with our Japan R&D team. You know, our club R&D team is in Japan working over there. We have the ball and here in the U.S. Team. But, yeah, this is something that we're talking with them constantly about, and it's something we want to get back to. We wanted to make sure we stabilize the golf ball side of our business again here in the U.S., and I think we've done a great job with the launch of the 2020 product and the 2022 product. The Tour B have been pretty successful the last two rounds that we've launched, and then the E12 Contact has been really good for the consumer looking for a little bit straighter distance off the tee. So, you know, with that being said, we have stabilized kind of where we are in the market, and everybody kind of knows the golf ball fitting story. So it's something we don't want to get distracted with because we are a golf ball company first. That is our main thing. We're a rubber company with our heritage from Bridgestone Tire. So that's our first and foremost thing, as opposed to some other companies the other way around. They're metal woods and irons, and then they also have ball. Our main focus is ball. But to your point, we do want to get back to bringing some clubs to the market in the U.S. I'm a ball guy, so I don't have a great answer of when that might be, but I know that I'm asking our club guy, you know, every couple months, I'm like, hey, man, you heard anything going on with the R&D team in Japan? And, you know, he'll kind of give me a, hey, yeah, they're supposed to send us some protos here soon or something like that. So it is something that he's working on, but there's no timetable that I can tell you definitively.
Well, let's talk ball then, because I knew it was a loaded question. I didn't actually expect you to give me a real answer, so I think we actually got more out of that than I thought, which is great.
I kind of skirted around that one as best I can.
That's fine. But I think there is an understanding out there, even on the THP forums, we talk as a community really fondly about our experiences with J40s. There are guys who swear by those wedges. I swear by the J15s. They are like this little tiny... the bladiest of blade wedges that I could just carve probably a turkey with if I really wanted to. You know, those were so much fun to play. So there's always just that lunatic fringe moment where you think back to things so fondly and it's like, I'm missing a piece of that in my
life. It's definitely niche, but so many people on the forum just talk about the J40 CB so fondly. And quite frankly, our guys had such a great run, you know. Kuchar won the Players, and then Sneds won the Tour Championship, and we could not hardly get them out of the J40 CB product because they played them so long and so well. And you know, I played those for a long time too, and you harken back, and it's a little bit of nostalgia, and you remember how you played so well with those clubs. And I mean, they're a great club. They were a forged CB, you know, nothing super fancy. It wasn't a hollow makeup or anything, just a one piece forged club that was made solid and had that back little triangle weighted perimeter piece back there that worked really well. And you know, especially with the low irons, I remember how solid it felt when you hit that little sweet spot. It didn't feel like you didn't hit anything where you get a flyer. It felt like a solid contact. And sometimes, you know, you hit a club and you get that sweet spot and it feels dead because it's there's nothing back there and it kind of jumps. But those clubs had a really solid feel to where when you hit it, you know you hit your number.
So let's talk Tour B.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's obviously a big year for you guys. A lot of excitement going into this product. One of the things that keeps coming back to me, and I see this every time I look at the box, is it's the smarter tour ball.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's a heavy concept. And I want you, I'm going to challenge you to stay away from what you're so good at, which is going into tech detail.
Okay.
Let's see, for the consumer out there that wants nothing to do with technology in a golf ball, why is this the smarter tour ball?
So the reason we kind of came to that and surmised that was it's because mainly the cover of the golf ball, which is a part of the entire golf ball, it is intuitive to what you're doing to it. So when you're hitting a wedge shot, you want it to be soft. So the cover with the new Reactive IQ cover reacts a certain way in a wedge shot, but it also reacts a little bit different on a normal force. Sorry, I can't help but get techie.
Yeah. So it's a hard one. I knew how good you were at the other stuff. So.
Normal force, I mean, like you're hitting your driver, like a flatter impact to where you're impacting the entire golf ball. It acts smart and it knows that it's a fast impact and it firms up for faster ball speed. So that's the smarter tour ball in a summed up sentence is the ball reacts to the impact applied to it. So if you hit it around the greens, it's going to be soft. If you hit off driver, it's going to be firm, the cover that is. So that's kind of where we kind of brought that through. It's not just a solid piece of rubber that, hey, it's a firm golf ball. It's going to be firm all the time. We want it to kind of react to the force applied to it and be smart and understand what it should do.
So just adding layers and layers of depth to an already intriguing ball. And I call it intriguing because when I think back to golf balls simplified over the years, I mean, it was always kind of, let's be honest, there's a big guy out there, and there's been a big guy out there for a long time, but the depth you've gone to support every style of golfer is, in my perspective, kind of leading the charge for the last decade, and the understanding that compression plays a really big role, even at the premium ball level. You know, looking back at those 10 years, how satisfied is your group at Bridgestone of where you've come, and what are the plans in the future to try and continue to tell that story?
Yeah, I mean, we're a consumer brand that makes balls for everybody. You know, the tour guys obviously play the balls that are over 105. That validates the product on the highest level, but that doesn't define how we make the golf balls. We obviously work with Tiger and Bryson, Lexi and Kuchar and all those guys, but we work a ton with everyday consumers who come out to our Covington plant, to our R&D test site, and we do a ton of fit testing for RX, RXS, E12. I could almost, without denial, guarantee that we probably do the most Serlin testing. A lot of brands just make Serlin product and, you know, on paper they decide what they're going to do, but we do a ton of robot and player testing, even on two-piece Serlin products. So we really try to reach out to the consumer on every level, not just the guys that we pay to play the ball. You know, that is an important part of our brand, but it's not, I would even consider, not the most important part of our brand. The most important part is providing consumers with a ball that fits their game and delivers what they need. And that may not be what Tiger and Bryson need. You know, some other brands say that and they pass it down. You know, what the tour player uses is what's good for you. And that could be, you know, could be so with a percentage of players. But, you know, for most players, they need something different. They need something that is a little less spin off the driver, that has a little bit more forgiving core. Or they need something that's a little bit straighter flight. They don't need to work the ball like Fred and Tiger. They need to hit it straight. So the E12 does that for them. So we really study the consumer and we build products that work best for them, not just pass it down from the tour players.
So let's talk more about that, because you have kind of drawn the line in the sand, and I know from personal experience is you're not afraid to pass over that speed when it comes to the proper fit, but you have effectively determined that one half of your tour ball lineup, or your upper end lineup of golf balls, are a primary focus on amateur golfers, which not many companies can really say. I mean, that's 50% of the products you guys are designing and working on, if not more.
A little more, probably, if you think of on down past the Tour B-balls.
Yeah, so I think that's really an interesting takeaway for me, is that you're not just saying, we produce this ball for the absolute best players, to promote the absolute best possible for performance for them. You're saying, we recognize, unlike the USGA and RNA, that there are other golfers out
yes,
there.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't know if you want this to be a big blast on them. I'm happy to go down that road.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that there are other golfers out there, and a huge percentage of golfers that would benefit from an absolute focus on technology going towards them. Is that pretty fair?
Yeah, I mean, if you think of the way every other product is built outside of golf ball, just think of clubs and irons. I mean, like, yeah, a blade with really firm shafts in it, you could probably flight it down, you could probably hit little cutties to back right pins, you can hood it and draw it, but like every player can't do that.
You're talking about yourself right
now. No.
This man
no, not me.
I watched him look at a 50-yard shot today. I'm pretty sure he's trying to figure out how to work it in.
I'm so bad on the course. I'm so bad at trying to see weird windows and stuff like that. But anyway, like, you know, when you make clubs, when you make shafts, when you make club faces, perimeter weighting, there's different club makeups for everybody. Everybody just can't use a blade iron or even like a player CB. We have clubs that have bigger soles that launch the ball up higher. So like, why on earth would anybody think of the golf ball in the same way? You know, like, hey, the number one player in the world uses this ball and it's a really firm ball that has a ton of spin everywhere. I should play that ball. You don't think of clubs that way. Most people don't. Some people are at that level where they can, 100%. But when you're choosing your driver and choosing your irons, you're trying to match up what works best for you. You don't even think twice about what shafts are in, you know, John Rahm or Tiger or Bryson or Dustin Johnson's bag. People don't equate the same way that. So you match up what works well for you, what flights the ball a little higher if you hit it low, what flights it lower if you hit it high. So the golf ball is exactly in the same vein. You know, you shouldn't just pick the ball just because Bryson and Tiger plays. I'll use my own players. You shouldn't play the ball just because they play it. Play the ball that fits you. And, you know,
of that lineup, let's be clear.
Yeah, Turby. Exactly. Turby, folks. You know, and you know, even side of our fitting, when Sam Fu does fittings and stuff now, we still find that, you know, 8 out of 10 find a better ball on us. But we still have 2 out of 10, a little bit more than 2 out of 10, that when they go through the fitting, Sam Fu, our master fitter, will look at you and say, hey, you hit that chrome soft pretty good. That ball kind of fits you. But if you want to try one in our line, here's the RX and see if that works for you. So we're not under the delusion of every person who ever comes up to us, we're going to beat it. Because mathematically, that is impossible. Yeah. You're not going to do that. So if a brand tells you we can beat somebody every single time, it's not going to happen. And it's not true. So to be authentic, you know, you have to make sure you're looking at all the parameters and make sure you fit them in. And we'll still give you a recommendation, even if you hit your Pro V1X further than our Tour BX, we're going to give you our recommendation and tell you why you might should try that ball. But there are players that come up to us and are fit, and so they did their homework and they kind of have a match in another brand and it works for them. And that's just reality and how it's actually going to work. But, you know, we don't encourage people to play Tiger's ball just because he plays it. We want Tiger to introduce people to the Bridgestone brand, and then you make a decision of which Bridgestone ball fits your game best.
So I'm going to pitch something to you.
All right.
For the second time this week. Tiger is familiar with the color red. I believe he's quite fond of it.
Yes.
Sunday red, if you will.
Yes.
His ball is actually labeled blue.
Blue.
And has a little blue number on it.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I'm more than happy to trade the blue to the RX and give him the red for him. Like, let's just go for it.
All right. So the numbers are bigger than Tiger Woods. The number colors. We had the number colors before Tiger, so we will not be changing it. And I'm sorry, Dan.
This is
you're not even bigger than Tiger, so I can't change the numbers for you.
Yes.
No, I hear you. We've internally, we've discussed changing the numbers to the color of the ball. So, like, RXS would have a green number, and, you know, the black number would be with X. But we've kind of stuck with the blue being the spin version, you know, and spin around the greens, and the red being more the distance. And that's kind of how it lines up. And
but this, think about this. Let's go a different direction. I'm open to anything. Because I'm not done. I've got time here. All right. Okay. So, a very skilled player goes to a professional sports team.
Okay.
And a person happens to be wearing their jersey number. Okay. Oftentimes, they will give that number to the special player due to the fact that it's personal for them.
So, you want us to make you just for you is down. What you're going slow with down. Here?
This isn't about me.
Okay? A special
this
run?
This is for Tiger, okay? Oh. Yeah.
Tiger does what we say, by the way. So
it's been a fun joke. You know, obviously it's not a huge deal. It's just it cracks me up every time because it's so. You know, Tiger is pretty much synonymous with the Sunday Reds. So
yeah.
But I do. I'm curious, and I'd love to talk about Jason Day a little bit because he's now a player product. The leading question I need to know is he played that product a fair bit before you signed.
Yeah,
is that fair?
Yeah. He played it about a year before, and we went and saw him just a few weeks ago at Sawgrass before the players, and we talked to him in depth about it a little more than we had some phone calls with him, and he did some testing on his own, but we kind of got to connect to him in person finally and talked to him a little bit about that process. And he harkened back to Bay Hill, you know, and when Tiger was playing Bay Hill, he hit this 40-yard shot. They both had a really tight to the pin, you know, they short-sided themselves on the par five, and they got too close, and they meant to go back. But he said we were literally like on a blanket right next to each other. And he said the pin was so tight. And Tiger gets up, and he addresses the ball, and it, you know, doesn't really look like he's manipulating the club and trying to, like, get it way up in the air. You know how you lean back and you try to loft it higher? He hits his shot because he's confident in the spin of the ball because he plays the really spinny XS. So you can put a ton of spin.
And he's played it for, like, a decade.
Exactly. Yeah. So he hits it. He lands it on the green. He says, you know, it's, like, 3 feet from the pin. It goes by, and then it just, like, checks. And he's got, like, a 1.5-footer to tap in for par from, or for birdie from 40 yards. And then Jason said, I stood over my ball and just immediately he said, I can't hit that shot with this ball. Whatever model he was playing, I don't know the specific model. The brand was obviously, he was with TaylorMade. But he said that he had to manipulate it and hit like this semi-flop shot. And then he even laughed. He said, the only reason I got up and down is because I got lucky. It one-hopped and hit the pin and stopped. He said it would have definitely went 12 feet by. And in my mind, I knew I didn't have that shot. Now, obviously, he said, I'm not taking anything away from Tiger. I know he hits these really nice, handsy shots, low spinners. But, like, in my mind, I thought instantly there, or he thought instantly there, like, I couldn't hit that shot with this ball. So then he literally said after the round, you know, he didn't say anything during the round, obviously, to him. He got done with the round, and he found Tiger and his guys and said, hey, can I get a sleeve of those? Because I'd love to kind of chip around with it. So he started with that, and he went back home when the tournament was over, and he just had one sleeve of, you know, Torby XS, and he was just, like, messing around the house, and he began to understand that the specification of that ball was just so different in a way that he could manipulate and do different things.
He's got a pretty sweet setup at home, too.
Yes, up there towards you, yeah.
Crazy, yeah.
Yeah, not many tour pros up in the land of Ohio, right?
No. I would have got up and fit him for it. That would have been no problem. Yeah.
I wanted to go up there because I literally was like, can we go up there to that sweet setup? But, I mean, Sawgrass was pretty awesome, too. It was like 2 weeks before the event. It was so premium and lush.
You guys did get to connect with him at Sawgrass.
Though. Yes, at Sawgrass is where we did the testing. But then he played it for a year. But after about 3 months, he got on a call with me and Andrew. And he was like, man, this thing is really spinny. Like, and so we talked about kind of where it spins a lot. You know, his nine irons were one of his things where he said, you know, it's really kind of like the low irons. I love it on, like, full wedge shots from, like, 120 and in. But then when I get to, like, 120 to 160, I'm hitting a couple little floaters. And so there's my point of, like, there's wrong fits inside of our golf ball line.
Yeah.
So even though you use a Bridgestone, sometimes you could be in the wrong golf ball. And it's not a catch-all for all of our balls. Right. So we started talking to him about the X model and said, hey, yeah, this has a little less spin into and around the greens if you're inside of 120. But, like, you're going to knock off some of that. Because he's a really spinny player. He was he was hitting 9-irons at, you know, 11,000 spin with XS, and then we got him down to like 95 to 10,000 with X, which is plenty of spin for a 9-iron. Yeah.
And he's stopping it. He elevates the ball quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. He hits it like U-high up there. So.
U-high. That was very judgy.
But that's why I'm saying it's a good thing, because watching him put it up there, it's not bad seeing that nice little tour. You got like that tour trajectory window, you know. Like Tiger obviously hits it lower, but like you go out on tour and you go down the line and you see Spieth, Thomas, Day, Rory, they're hitting these like highly launched, you know, irons that are great. But anyway, we got him down to the X and he really liked that ball. And, you know, then, you know, he really wanted to kind of hold off on the agreement. He said, let me just work with it some more and, you know, we'll catch up at the end of the year. So, you know, our R&D team kept up with him and talked with him some. And then when it came around the beginning of the year, he said, yeah, let's make it official and let's work it out. Because we wanted him last year, too, for sure. But he kind of wanted to wait and make sure it was right for him. And he likes the ball. And, boy, is he's a nice dude. He's so great to work with. And he's a family guy. And I loved working with him. And we got him, you know, down in Sawgrass a couple weeks ago. And, you know, picked his brain about what he liked about the ball, and it was just kind of cool. And you know, he had a great Tiger story and talking with Tiger. I mean, there were other stories about him at shoots for other brand, and Tiger would be hitting his ball and they would be discussing the ball at another brand shoot. So that's kind of where it began, even before the Bay Hill conversation.
So I'm fascinated by this because you have the fact that he would spend that much time with the ball means it's a very important piece to his puzzle.
Yes.
And you know, obviously Tiger Woods can tell you where a gram is wrong in a wedge, let alone what he wants with a golf ball. And this has been a partnership that's gone on for a very long time with him.
Mm-hmm.
You also have Bryson in your ball, who is unbelievably picky based on what we've seen publicly. I mean, I've certainly heard no more than anyone else has, but you know, between the tests he's run early on and the expectations he has from every product in his bag, it's pretty clear that the guys who eventually end up in your product are very, very critical of that product prior to signing a deal. And obviously money's money. Let's not play it silly.
Sure.
But the fact that they commit so much time and effort
they
to
could
make
go
sure
anywhere.
It works for
all
them,
three of those guys could go. Tiger could have went anywhere. Bryson obviously could have, and so could Day. He was a free agent.
I think that's super interesting.
Yeah.
You know, because there's the ball that we've talked about this on THP TV. You and I have talked about it in the past. I mean, the ball is a critical component.
Right.
And we had this discussion on live the other day where I can go through this tech studio here and pull up any set of irons and find a good window based on the ball I incorporate with it. And,
right.
And I can change between a super low spin
hollow body construction.
Hollow body,
yeah, exactly.
But, and I'll throw like the XS down.
Yeah.
And suddenly it's in the perfect spin window again. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, that's such a big deal.
Yep.
And if you have a ball that doesn't hit the window you can with the clubs you're comfortable with, I mean, you're kind of doing yourself a disservice. And it seems like these guys are very focused on that. So I think just from the outside looking in, I think that's really cool that you guys have the guys who identify as dudes who just genuinely are interested in high performance in their ball.
Yeah, the one thing I always love when we do, when we get, you know, Tiger to do interviews and sit downs and talks is obviously one of the things we ask him about is ball fitting, because it's near and dear to our hearts. You know, ball fitting to the tour pros is a little different than what we experience through ball fitting.
He's smiling, folks.
So
he's very excited.
So Tiger, the thing that comes out of his mouth every time I ask him, you know, every couple of years and say, hey, you know, what's the importance of ball fitting? What does it mean for you? And every time the guy says, the ball is the most important thing. You know, once you get the ball figured out and you know that it fits your game, then everything else falls behind it. And he's always talked about that. He's always talked about, you know, what he needs from the ball, the windows he needs to hit, you know, the spin he needs to get. And then he builds everything kind of around the golf ball. And, you know, the golf ball for the everyday consumer, I can't stress enough, it's important for ball fitting for tour pros, but I've always thought it's even more important for everybody going out there. We've all got day jobs.
Yeah.
You know, we're not hitting on all cylinders. So for God's sakes, get the ball, you know, dialed in and make sure it's the most consistent thing you can have. Because nothing drives me nuts more than playing with somebody and they pull out a two-piece firm distance ball, and then the next hole they're playing like a super four-piece or three-piece spinny urethane. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, golf's hard enough. Like, at least eliminate this one variable. Can you imagine putting a different putter in your hand on every green just to, you know, like you just putted one and you made a putt and then you use a different putter? Like, no one would do that. And the ball should be looked at the same way. Stick with one ball and, you know, make sure it fits your game. But, you know, make sure it fits. But, you know, definitely kind of use it throughout your round or throughout a season at least, and kind of stick with it.
And it's not just the package. I mean, we have video showing upwards of like 1,400 RPMs spin from top to bottom of your lineup. So that'd be...
Yeah.
Would be RX to XS.
Oh, absolutely.
And,
yeah.
You know, that's beautifully
represented. That's urethane to urethane. Yeah. Think of going Sirlin to urethane.
Yeah, and I was going to flow into that a little bit, but,
yeah.
You know, that can we expect... So that was on the previous lineup, which was a lot of fun to do. If we were to do that for 2022, are we going to see a similar range of spin difference?
Yeah, top to bottom, it's going to be pretty similar as far as XS to RX, if you're talking about like spin off driver, spin into around the greens. The one thing that moved a little bit was the X model. We did produce a little bit more spin on the X model into and around the green versus the previous one. So it's going to be a little bit spinnier, and it's going to give you a little more greenside control.
That's just around the green?
Yeah.
Kind of the smartest tour ball, right?
Kind of like 120 and in, or like 110 and in. You know, the X version now is going to be pretty similar to what you saw in kind of mid to long irons, but like around the greens. And quite frankly, one of the biggest things that we worked on with Bryson so much with the XS is the spin control from the rough and wet and dry. That's one thing he wanted to get in his equation a little bit better.
Yeah, we see him with the bottles.
So we dipped golf balls and we laid them down there. We've sprayed them. We've sprayed clubs. We've put, you know, newspapers in between the club and the ball. That way we could, you know, consistently mimic grass in rough. And we've done robot testing. That's all the stuff that goes behind the ball that, you know, not that I'm bragging on Bridgestone, but that's all the stuff that goes in the ball that we don't even talk about marketing-wise. You know, tweaks to the mantle layer, you know, all that testing of standard deviation from when you hit it from the fairway to the rough. I mean, Bryson said, which is insane, right? He was like, you know, I'd love for the ball to spin the same in the fairway and the rough. And I'm like, dude, it's not going to happen, but we can try our best.
Everyone would love
that. So I kind of look at him and laugh because he's saying it backhanded being funny, you know. But I look at him and say, that's the goal, right, is to make it act the same all the way through the bag no matter what the condition is. And he talked about his U.S. Open win and how the previous version was so good from the rough. It gave him a huge advantage because he was obviously very long, you know, back then, still long now. But he decided he would play the U.S. Open that way and hit it down there and try to control his wedges better.
Absolutely insane, too. Yeah. I mean, that was – what a performance that was.
Yeah, he won by six.
Yeah.
You know, one of the
and,
biggest –
And doing it in the absolute opposite way that the intent was.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The way it was designed.
His way.
So funny. His way, absolutely.
Like he always – he does it his way and – sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but by God, he's going to try and he's going to put in his effort. And you can't ever blame the guy for not going out on a limb and trying something new, because he certainly will.
Yeah. So let's talk geek mode now, because from a tour perspective, we have major season coming up, Masters in a couple weeks.
Yes,
are you a big watcher of golf? I know you've got a young guy at home keeping you a little busy, but how much time can you devote to actually watching tour?
Well, Masters week will be... all the time. Like, I'll watch all of it. You know, fortunately, I'm going to be down in Augusta for the whole week. It's kind of a home game for us. We're an hour and a half away from Augusta. So we make an effort to get over and, you know, do some activations. We'll do some auto ball fittings. We'll do some corporate housing fittings and stuff like that. So it'll be a fun week down there. So I'll be able to kind of get on the couch midday and kind of catch up with everything. But I love golf. I love watching it. I love playing it. I mean, obviously, I love Bridgestone, but like, I just love golf in general. And it's been my life and career since college, you know. And it put me down a completely different path than what I thought I was going to go to school for and do in my life. I thought I was going to be a civil engineer. And, you know, I'd never touched a golf club until like second year in college. I played baseball. That's all I did. But, when I touched the golf club, it just something about it kind of got me. So I love to watch it. I mean, even if our guys aren't in contention, obviously I love to see Bryson and Tiger, Kuchar and Day and all those guys play well, but I just enjoy watching it no matter who the guy is. And, you know, there's guys I root for outside of our brand. And, you know, I'm excited that, you know, it's weird because it feels like half the season's over statistically on the PGA Tour. But in my mind, I always feel like the Masters is like the beginning, you know, and it's the beginning of the major season. And, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, we've talked a lot to Bryson and his agent about the way he plays Augusta. And he keeps saying, like, it's so important to him. It means so much to him. He wants to win Augusta so bad. He wants to play well there so bad. And so they really have talked about his game plan and how he plans to kind of navigate that course in a different way, even in the last 2 years. So he's still trying to figure out how he's going to play it. And I look forward to seeing what he's going to do this one. The hand seems to be
nice
feeling
to
a little
be
bit better.
Healthy, yeah.
Yeah. And I think he's going to, you know, I think he's in a good spot of hedging expectations too. You know, when you come back from something like that, you maybe play a little more conservative and you play some safer shots, which he's typically not known for. He's kind of a go-for-it guy.
I remember when he was talking about the lines he's going to take at Augusta.
Oh, I know.
Making people lose their
mind. Oh, yeah, people were cringing because he was talking about, yeah, I'm going to have 150 on this hole, 120. Yeah. Maybe he should have kept that in the bank.
Yeah. But, it seems to me like he's just having fun. He feels like sharing.
Yeah.
Because it's a curious thing. I mean,
what's
you get
funny,
an idea in your head.
Yeah.
And then you want to share it.
And what's funny is there's no ill intent when he talks that way. And, you know, it was, some people took offense to him talking of that. But, like, you know, that's just him just blatantly just being an open book and talking about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, he took a little flack for it. But, I mean, you know, he's just talking, and he's a sharer of knowledge, and he over informations you sometimes, and that's just the way he is.
Yeah, but I mean, Tiger Woods is
not
on the non-participant list presently.
Yes. He's not on it yet.
Rumor has it he's scoping it out. Rumor has it he's walking just fine at home. Everyone, I think, reasonably speaking, who has paid attention to golf in the last two decades is waiting and hoping to see the big cat walk in Augusta. I'm assuming you guys feel the same way. What do you think? Think he's going to show up? You want to give him a call?
Yeah, I think my good, close, personal friend was just down there with a practice round, we heard. But, I think This is just a me personal Adam Rayburg thing, but, you know, 6-8 months ago, even before the PNC, I always thought Augusta would be a good comeback for him. I don't have any information. I don't know if he's playing or not, so it's all gut. But, I mean, the field is small. It's an invitation, right? You know, there's 90 to, you know, 100 guys in the field. There's a ton of past champions that play in it that don't have a chance to win. Let's be just honest. These guys are collecting AARP.
Yeah.
They're older. You know, they're in the field. There's a certain amount of AMs that are in the field that, you know, in the history of the Masters have never won. So when you start looking at the field, it's a pretty safe entry back in. I know it's a major, and I know it has a lot of prestige and a lot of pressure, but the guy's played great there. He's obviously won 5, and he's had a good success. Successful lifetime at Augusta. He knows the place by heart. He knows every green. To me, Augusta was always one. And St. Andrews, everybody said that too. St. Andrews is one, which would make sense as well. But I definitely think Augusta is one that is a safe comeback for him. Because, I mean, quite frankly, he can just ease it around that course and make the cut. You know, I would assume, if he's going to play, I assume he's going to make the cut. I'm obviously a Tiger fan. I've talked about it plenty of times with you guys, even before Bridgestone. I was a huge Tiger fan, played all the video games growing up, so there's no love lost there. So take this as a grain of salt. I think he's going to make the cut. I think he'll, if he plays, I think he'll make the cut, you know, and I wouldn't put it past Tiger to somehow give that Saturday or Friday feel like he's in there like he did. I mean, he did that so much in 19 before he did win. You remember at Valspar and, you know, at the PGA in 18 versus Koepka, he would give you those butterflies of being in there. I know this is a different case, but, I mean, he's obviously practicing at home. He feels good. he feels good enough to get Joey down there, do a little practice round, you know, play some practice rounds at Medalist. So, you know, I wouldn't put it past him to give us a little flutter on Friday or late Thursday and play in a pretty decent round. And, you know, he knows where to hit it. He knows where not to hit it. So I'm excited to see him there for obvious reasons, even outside of Bridgestone. I think it would be great for the game. The game really would, a little pickup right now would be really good for the PGA Tour.
Can you imagine if he's in the final group on Sunday? The lid will come off. Anyone bothers me that day, yeah, I'll be very annoyed.
Yeah, if he does that, it will be quite amazing. I think if he gets out there, even if he does miss the cut, it's still good for the game, yeah, just to know that he's going to compete. He's not going to shoot something crazy bad. It's just probably not going to happen. I mean, I know I hate to use this reference, but we saw him at the PNC, and he hit great shots. I mean, I know it was a kind of, as he said, hit and giggle kind of tournament, but he hit some great wedge shots. We talked to his camp when we did the shoot with him a couple months ago, and, you know, his camp, we kind of asked him the question, did you guys kind of expect that, you know, precision from him at the PNC? Because he, you know, and they even said, like, no, that was, you know, that was some good shots. Like, I know he'd been practicing the yard and stuff and going to the range, but he hit the ball pretty amazing. So, you know, you never know with him. You know, the hands are still there. He's talked about that. He's talked about that the feels are still there, and, you know, the wedge shots and the putting, you know, kind of he feels like it still hasn't left. So you just never know. There's, you know, Phil finds a way to win a major at 51 and, you know, get in contention. Tiger won in 19. It's not that long ago.
Yeah.
You just never know. It could be, you know, the roars at Augusta could be back again. So yeah. It'd be good. It would be really good.
I'm up for it, man. We could sit here and talk about this all night, but I think we should probably wrap it up. Do you have any questions for me today?
No, man. I like your vibe on the course. It was good to get out and play for real with you and see that beautiful tour trajectory that I'm jealous of.
The vibe you got was me laughing at myself feeling the wind. That's what it was.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, you know what's great about your swing, too, is, like, you have such a penetrating flight with driver. You know, it doesn't, like, you're not, like, hitting driver straight up in the air. So you've got, like, these high, you know, towering iron shots, but then you hit these great penetrating ball flights with driver. So it's a good combination. You obviously wouldn't want the other way around.
Yeah.
You know, so it was good to get out and play with you and, you know, come down there to Atlanta and let's get some golf in, you know, in the Atlanta area.
I've heard there's Bermuda there. That's very scary.
Oh, yes.
So.
Yeah. See, I'm the opposite. I'm a Bermuda guy. I kept waiting for the grain to grab these putts today, yeah, and it just wasn't doing it, yeah, on the bend.
So why don't you stop by and the next time you go up to J-Day's house and we'll play my course.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe a home and home. Let's,
yes,
do that.
Exactly. We'll figure something out.
All right, my friend. That was super fun. Make sure you guys go check out. We'll have some content coming with Adam on THP's YouTube channel. They have a really cool thing called Auto right now that you'll start to see more and more of. And brand new Tour B-Balls. Go check them out. They look awesome. Thanks for coming, Adam.
All right. Thanks for having me. Go Tiger.
For you guys playing this week, have a great time. Make sure it counts, and I will see you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.